This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company. For more information and links to all our great podcasts, visit hartmanmedia.com.
Welcome to the Holistic Survival Show with Jason Hartman. The economic storm brewing around the world is set to spill into all aspects of our lives. Are you prepared? Where are you going to turn for the critical life skills necessary to survive and prosper? The Holistic Survival Show is your family's insurance for a better life. Jason will teach you to think independently, to understand threats, and how to create the ultimate action plan. Sudden change or worst case scenario, you'll be ready. Welcome to Holistic Survival, your key resource for protecting the people, places, and profits you care about in uncertain times. Ladies and gentlemen, your host, Jason Hartman.
It's my pleasure to welcome John Potash to the show. He is the author of two books, including Drugs as Weapons Against Us, the CIA's murderous targeting of SDS, Panthers, Hendrix, Lenin, Cobain, Tupac, and other leftists. He's also the author of The FBI War on Tupac Shakur and Black Leaders. John, welcome. How are you?
Good. Thanks for having me on.
Interesting book titles. Tell me, what is the thesis behind these books?
Well, the thesis behind the first book is the fact that this Tupac Shakur was actually a left-wing activist. All his life, he was a left-wing activist, and he just hid his activism behind this gangster facade as part of a political plan to appeal to gangs and politicize them. And so in investigating his life and his parents' life, his parents were leading Black Panthers, I found that if you could see similar tactics and personnel that were used to target Black leaders of the last five decades as were used against Tupac Shakur's family. And Tupac, of course, coming into the 90s and adding so much wealth and fame to what was already Black leadership, because he was head of a group called the New African Panthers when he was 17, 18 years old, and they were active nationwide, and they were trying to replicate the Black Panthers. I show how there was a particularly intense targeting that no one has really been talking about against musicians as well as just general left-wing activists. So that's the reason for the first book. Now, I had actually started the research with the second book, Drugs as Weapons Against Us, because I was working as a counselor in Baltimore City, mostly with addictions, and then I went back to get a master's to add just mental health counseling in general plus addictions. I found that there seemed to be a use of drugs, as Ramsey Clark, former Attorney General of the United States, told me. He thinks drugs were used by the government to sedate and divide the masses. And I just found evidence that you could also say oppress the masses.
Okay, so first of all, I want you to define what kind of drugs, pharmaceutical drugs or illegal drugs?
I think it'd be a whole nother book to talk about pharmaceutical drugs, though I think you could, you know, people have written books about
that.
There's
a great documentary called RX Nation, RX like prescription.
Yeah.
You've probably seen it and you're familiar with it, but the pharmaceutical industry has a lot of guilt,
right?
If you ask me.
Right. It was just too much, so I kept it to illicit drugs and so focused on that, and mostly around a CIA operation called MKUltra. That was its goal, was to use drugs as weapons against us in a variety of ways. And people usually only focus on the 1950s of MKUltra.
What is MKUltra?
Well, Operation MKUltra was started, I believe it was first titled in 1953, followed Operations Artichoke and another one, I think it was called Bluebird. And it ended up being a large umbrella name for many sub-operations, which were experimenting with various drugs, you know, dozens, about two dozen drugs at least. And I show a document of the MKUltra experiments of all the drugs they were testing on Edgewood Arsenal soldiers, on prisoners, and then on hospital patients, and eventually on college students and many of us through CIA front companies like the Human Ecology Fund, which gave out money to professors to get volunteers to try different psychedelics and see how it affected them. So the biggest drug used, you know, experimented with, and I show used operationally, was LSD. They used a number of psychedelics. And so,
but John,
I
don't want you to make too much of a leap here, because I think a lot of the listeners might be thinking, as am I, at least to some extent, I entertain lots and lots of conspiracy theories, and the United States was a conspiracy against the British. So everybody with your conspiracy theory bashing, shut up, because you're an idiot, okay? Conspiracy theories do exist, period. I'm not nuts, you know. They're just more than one person talking about a plan. It happens every day, millions of times a day, if not billions. People are wondering maybe why you're making this leap from how is the FBI using illegal drugs to bring these people down? I mean, the drugs are illegal. The FBI would be against those things unless you're going to the thing that says, well, you know, the CIA planted crack cocaine in East LA to attack the black race. You know, we've heard that story. But what do you mean? I mean, how are they doing this?
Well, it was a CIA operation, Operation MKUltra, and it came out in ABC News and other mainstream sources that they did develop a psychedelic hit list where they would dose Fidel Castro, Che Guevara, Nasser of Egypt, and other leftist leaders around the world to make them seem less competent. They would dose them with LSD.
So they would somehow just, you know, drop some acid in their drink? I mean, that's going to be really hard to do with, like, Castro. How do you get that close to him?
Congress admitted that there was at least a dozen attempts to kill Castro. So, you know, they had undercover agents doing these kinds of operations. They had different plans in terms of aerosolizing LSD and things like that, but they have a number of undercover agents all over the world, basically. That's what the CIA does. But A. E. Hotchner, Ernest Hemingway's longtime editor, wrote an excellent book called Blown Away about the Rolling Stones. And amidst that book, he has a page talking about one CIA agent named Robert Lashbrook, who was working for MKUltra and 12-year CIA veteran. And he says his job in London was to get LSD into as many hands of musicians as possible, but to get as many musicians using LSD as possible. Okay, and that was MKUltra's goal, was to popularize LSD. Because they'd already done so many tests on it, they found in their own government documents, they said their goal was to get people on LSD because they think people will be more easily manipulated once they were using LSD. And they also found that it was causing some mild cerebral damage. It was causing some problems with people, and that by popularizing it, you could take away some of the effectiveness of the anti-war movement.
So one of the things Steve Jobs kind of famously said is that LSD, you know, the fact that he tried it and actually used it a few times, I believe, was an amazing mind-expanding experience for him and made him the creative person he was. He said something along those lines.
Yeah.
So that's kind of interesting. I mean, I would almost think that maybe this would have the opposite effect they were looking for. But the other part of it that's interesting is you fast forward to today and you look at this fight to legalize marijuana, right? And now it's legal in two states and medical in like 20 some odd other states, right? You would think that the right, the far right, and sort of some elements of government are very much against this, right? The feds won't legalize it, so it's still illegal on a federal level, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, if you want to make the population passive, I mean, forget about fluoride in the water, just make pot legal. You know, that's about the most passive drug going. You know, I don't know why you'd have alcohol be legal and pot illegal if you want the population to lay down and can roll over them. Any thoughts about that? I don't think anybody's really saying that. I haven't heard it anywhere else. It just came from me.
Well, I agree with what you just said about weed and making people passive. There's no doubt about that. You know, you turn us into a bunch of house cats if you get us all smoking weed regularly. I think that weed and acid are very different drugs. And I think weed is much more benign. But yes, it does cause apathy and cause laziness. Now, in terms of acid, one person saying that it expanded my consciousness doesn't make for a study. They did studies. I included four of those studies. You know, it showed those studies in my book, and they did many, many studies with acid. And 1,000 Edgewood Arsenal soldiers said that even after 19 years, 25% of them said they still had negative effects from that acid 19 years before. Now, I ate half a dozen hits of acid myself in college, and for a year, I thought I'd just hurt my mind tremendously. My grades dropped drastically. I lost abilities that I've never regained. luckily, after about a year, I started to bring my grades up again and things got better. And
Wow,
so I
that's
was
pretty
lucky.
scary. That's
I'm good.
why that kind of stuff really
Yeah.
scares me. I've never used it. I must admit,
Good
though,
for you.
I am very curious. I'm just too afraid
Yeah.
of dying or hurting myself in some way. Otherwise, I would have tried it possibly by now.
Well, good for you. Stay away from it. It's dangerous. It's
Okay, so at
bad
least we know
news.
where you're coming from. So you're an anti-drug guy, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think drugs themselves are neutral. I'm not anti or pro. I'm just anti the effect that drugs can have on people to hurt us in terms of fighting the fascist forces that are seem to be controlling our society right now, you know. I really am pretty neutral in weed legalization. I'm for decriminalization. I don't know, you know, I'm against loads of people smoking weed all the time because, as you said, yes, it could make people more passive and not have them do things to change society for the
Yeah,
better.
so that's an interesting point, and here's where I stand on it. As a libertarian, I think a lot of things should be legal. I'm afraid of more serious drugs, but I certainly think marijuana should be legal and all kinds of other things. I think there are way too many laws. It's used as an excuse so the government can come at anybody because we're all lawbreakers. We're all criminals. I've done many
Exactly.
shows on it. John Stossel, who's been on my show, has done some shows on it too. I had the author of Three Felonies a Day on my show. If you own a business, especially, you are definitely committing crimes. I mean, at the very least, you're not obeying the building codes and the ADA laws and stuff like this. Just read a story today about a guy who didn't pay his property taxes and the cops came and yanked him out of his car. I mean, are you kidding me? This is insanity, what's going on. You know, and these are little rarefied cases, but if they become more common, it is very, very scary. That said, though, I think that this whole pot thing is kind of a red herring. This, you know, the marijuana thing, if you want to make the culture passive, heck, just make it okay, you know?
Exactly. And so some of what you just said about weed and all is I have in my book, but I also have with over 1600 endnotes and lots of evidence for that this is exactly the case. This is the government's motive, goal, and this is how they carried it out. And one of the ways they carried it out is they took this brilliant young rapper named Tupac Shakur, along with people like Dr. Dre, the top rap producer in the country, and they convinced them to get involved with weed, to promote weed. And then when Tupac, of course, started sobering up and getting away from weed and was going to be talking against weed because he already had before when he was in jail, saying he thought he had developed an addiction to weed, he had to get away from it was just numbing himself. Then they did him in. And so
Wow,
that's
that's
what
fast.
happened.
That's so counterintuitive because you would think that these folks would be really looking down on that, but secretly they're popularizing it. It's kind of like the Wall Street crooks who say, "Oh, we don't want more regulations. God, the government needs to get off of our case," when secretly they love those regulations because that's what allows them to maintain their near monopoly status. Because
I
no
could see
new
that,
entrants
yeah.
can come into the field. You're not going to start a Goldman Sachs tomorrow because there's way too much regulation. It's impossible. That's what keeps them big, is all these regulations.
Yeah, so I found the same pattern that occurred with Tupac Shakur occurred with John Lennon, Kurt Cobain, and Jimi
Tell us about
Hendrix.
that.
With Jimi Hendrix, for example, he couldn't get big in the United States. I don't know if it was the racism or what, but he couldn't get big in the United States. He goes over to England, he gets big in England first. He gets so big and he's so young when he's getting big that he can't handle all the tour management, everything else. And in comes a guy named Mike Jeffries, who was former MI6. He said he was MI6. That's British CIA. And people generally know that one, you know, once CIA, always CIA. It's a lifetime
It's
commitment,
like
pretty
being in the
much.
mob, you
You
never get
know,
out.
right. Except the few that are whistleblowers. You know, there's a few great whistleblowers, such as John Stockwell, who I talked to in 1990. After a conference, and he told me some very interesting stuff then about, you know, CIA drug trafficking, both in Vietnam and in Afghanistan. And you know, he's got videos on YouTube giving speeches on that, and I quote him from the speeches. He was a CIA station chief and all. But anyway, to get back to the point, so Mike Jeffries enters Jimi Hendrix's life and proceeds to give him loads of drugs. When Jimi Hendrix tries to get away from drugs, Mike Jeffries doses his drink before a political benefit that Jimi Hendrix was going to do against the war, and then plants drugs on him to get him busted in an airport, according to Jimi Hendrix's fiancee, Monica Daneman, in her memoir. And then the press presents Jimi Hendrix as this crazed drug user who loves acid and promotes acid. And really, the best biographies on Jimi Hendrix say exactly the opposite. They say that his Purple Haze song was written before he ever tried acid, and it's something different. And actually, the acid Purple Haze was named after the song, not the song after the acid. And so they say, and the biographers say, that he only tried opiates once or twice. He only tried coke once or twice. He didn't like any of that stuff. In the last year or two of his life, he was trying to get away from, you know, getting away from all any hard drugs. Wasn't touching any hard drugs. He would only smoke occasional weed and drink a little bit, and that was it. But within the last few years, a memoir came out from a roadie, Jimi Hendrix's roadie, a guy named James Tapper, who said that Mike Jeffries admitted to me he had Jimi Hendrix killed. And he was drunk when he said it, but he did admit it. And the reason he had him killed, partly because Jimi Hendrix had fired him 48 hours before that. He was really trying to sabotage Jimi Hendrix. He was trying not to get him to do any political benefits. And as I said, when he did, you know, he dosed Jimi Hendrix's drink and then hurt his political benefit. So this was the situation with him. And so he was done in when he was getting more into activism in this last year or two of life, and getting and sobering up and trying to promote sobriety. I show how John Lennon, it was a similar way. First time John Lennon ate acid was when George Harrison's dentist dosed his coffee. You know, he was having him over for dinner, him and his wife, Cynthia Lennon, according to Cynthia Lennon, and according to George Harrison's partner, Patty Boyd. They both described the scene, how this dentist of George Harrison's invites him over for dinner, and then talks them into having dessert and coffee when they're trying to get out of there right after dinner for a friend's band. And then tells John Lennon and George Harrison, oh, well, you can't go out now because, you know, you just had LSD. And John Lennon said, what? And, you know, George Harrison said, what's LSD? He never even heard of it before at that time in 1965. And that's how Lennon and Harrison tried their first hits of acid. They were dosed. And so it's an unbelievable thing that a dentist would do that, risk his job, risk getting sued, risk legal charges. And you would usually only do that if you know you had immunity, legal immunity. Mm-hmm. Now, this was the same time as Lashbrook was trying to get acid into as many musicians' hands as possible. It's only 2 years later that Mick Jagger had his first hit of acid. It came from an undercover FBI agent named Jove, or as he also called himself, Schneiderman. And this came out in the London Daily newspapers, the fact that this guy was an undercover agent, gave Jagger his first hit of acid. The police swooped in a few hours later and charged Jagger with the number of charges that kept them under legal authority's thumb. Right. And they did this because Jagger was against the war, you know, voicing his opinion about being anti-war and going to anti-war rallies and all.
This is the military-industrial complex that is generally behind these types of things you're saying. Let's expand on that a little bit more. Let's say that the listeners believe what you're saying, okay? I bet there's more than one goal here, right? You hear people complain about the lack of morality in music and media and so forth, but these are the ones maybe that are actually glamorizing all of this, right? What goals can they accomplish with this? Make people more passive? What else?
With the weeds, make people more passive and have them kind of hurt their lives educationally, because most people know that smoking weed throughout high school or college, your grades are going to drop, you're not going to get as far, and you're going to be behind the eight ball then on. Terms of getting a good job and things like that. The other thing is, you know, make them more passive about doing any activism outside their work with weed. With acid, it's to hurt their competency. As William S. Burroughs, famous writer junkie, said, he thinks acid makes people less competent. It was hurt the competency of the anti-war movement and movements in general, and, you know, anti-war youth. And another goal was, of course, to, as Ramsey Clark said, sedate and divide the masses. When you get heroin and cocaine into communities, it really hurts the community in general with all the illegal stuff doing to get the heroin, to get the cocaine, with the sales, with the gangs that form around the huge profits from selling it, with the wars over drug dealing turf, with the property values going down because it becomes a dangerous neighborhood and all that stuff.
Sure, yeah.
Gary Webb, when he did his San Jose Mercury News articles on the CIA and crack cocaine with the Iran-Contra crack scandal, just documented the line of distribution of trafficking from the CIA assets down to Freeway Ricky Ross, down to two understudies of Freeway Ricky Ross, one which was Harry O. Harris, Michael Harry O. Harris, who founded Death Row Records, and with his lawyer, Dave Kenner. Death Row Records is the last label of Tupac Shakur. It was found that there was actually dozens of police officers at all levels of Death Row Records, and they were drug trafficking. They were also gun running, and I show the evidence that they also had orchestrated Tupac Shakur's murder with the help of the FBI and ATF agents who an FBI agent said were in the motorcade behind Tupac when he was killed. That's just some of the evidence of how this, many different, as you say, there's many goals and many different operations. There's, of course, money to be made off of the opium trafficking and the cocaine trafficking. And I show, John Stockwell talked about the opium trafficking in the Golden Triangle around Vietnam, where it's the top opium cultivation area, and the Golden Crescent around Afghanistan, which is also the top opium cultivation area, that lie on two ends of the same mountain range. And they happen to also be the areas of the two longest wars in American history, and I argue that's no coincidence.
Where do you stand politically?
My political leanings have been leftist, but after talking with different commentators like yourself, libertarians, some people that consider themselves right-wing, I'm trying to get away from that left-right paradigm and just say, this is really an attack on all of us.
Yeah,
now,
yeah.
It so happens that some of these entertainers would maybe fall into the category for being left wing because they're anti-war or pro-abortion rights and stuff. But it's really, obviously it's an attack on the mass of us in general.
Yeah, I hear you. And I think we could effectively argue that the whole left and right paradigm is a fallacy to begin with. That's just a way to divide the population, is get them arguing over these dumb little things while they're doing this, big thing right behind us, right?
I could see that. Yeah, I could see that happening, sure.
I liken it to a wrestling match on television. We all know that those wrestling matches are fake largely. I mean, not completely, but, largely fake, right? They're show business. That's what the big debate with the Democrats and Republicans is. It's a distraction. It's bread and circuses. It's entertainment.
Right.
And it's also a way to divide people. So
I agree with that, sure.
Very, really interesting stuff. Give out your website, if you would. Tell people where they can find out more about this.
Sure. It's johnpotash.com.
johnpotash.com. And John, are there any questions I didn't ask you, any areas we didn't cover that you'd just like to tell the listeners?
The other area, of course, drug cultivation is down in Latin America, and under Operation Sunrise, it came out that, U.S. intelligence saved thousands of Nazis and sent them down there to help with the CIA operations down there that included, besides trying to topple elected governments in Latin America, it included cocaine trafficking. And it's just a pretty unbelievable phenomenon. But yes, that's just another aspect of it all.
You talked about two major tight classes of drugs. There's the drugs that sort of do certain things to the people that take them and damage them in certain ways. But what about all the other drugs out there? Like you mentioned cocaine. Would that serve a purpose for the powers that be? Other than getting people busted. Because, having all this stuff criminalized is quite handy, especially when you have a privatized prison industrial complex, right? Because there's a huge profit motive here, which is just scary beyond belief to me. I mean, that is, that's just completely disgusting. What about other types of drugs? What would be going on there, and what would be the thinking of these powers in the government?
Well, it's interesting. It is the criminalization of cocaine and heroin that also just makes them so problematic and dangerous, is because when the addiction develops with either of those drugs, it costs so much to get them again, and people want them again badly. And they have to resort to stealing, dealing, hooking to make enough money to get them
there's
again.
There's usually another bunch of crimes there. See, if they made them,
exactly.
I went to a marijuana dispensary once on a tour with a group, and it was really interesting because I asked them about their business, and they said, it's actually quite difficult to make a profit. They had a dispensary and a farm. Sorry, it's both. This was in Colorado. And I said, well, really? It would seem like you're making a fortune. And she said, no. I mean, the price has plummeted since it was legalized. So guess what? All the criminals and cartels have been put out of business, right?
Good.
So
yeah.
By making it illegal, the price climbs, and by making it legal, the price plummets.
Right.
The fact that these drugs are illegal is what makes them expensive. It basically gives the criminals pricing power.
That's
so then
point.
They have to steal and commit other crimes to obtain these addictive substances. And then you can nail him for another crime, right?
Yep.
Go ahead with the rest of your thought there, though. I kind of interrupted you.
Yeah, and so it just creates a huge underclass and black market of people, as you say, that get felonies for possession or dealing, and people are killing each other over making profits off of them. And it really destroys neighborhoods, destroys huge communities. Basically, when the cocaine and opiates and heroin get into communities, it destroys that community. These people that get those felonies, yeah, they're then what we call disenfranchised. They can't vote.
Get a job.
They can't run for office. They can't get jobs. Yeah. So it creates a huge underclass of people that are just, you know, don't have a whole lot of power in society at all, like very little power in society at all.
Yeah. And the underclass is easy to keep down and dependent. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
It's an amazing cycle. It really is. John, thanks so much for joining us today. And any closing comment?
You know, my goal with this, of course, is just to save our current leaders, for people to become their own leaders, and for people to save their minds. And I hope can learn, you know, U.S. intelligence's tactics in order to do that. Thanks a lot so much for having me on.
John Potash, thanks so much.
Thank you, Jason.
Thank you for joining us today for the Holistic Survival Show, protecting the people, places, and profits you care about in uncertain times. Be sure to listen to our Creating Wealth show, which focuses on exploiting the financial and wealth creation opportunities in today's economy. Learn more at www.jasonhartman.com or search Jason Hartman on iTunes. This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company, offering very general guidelines and information. Opinions of guests are their own, and none of the content should be considered individual advice. If you require personalized advice, please consult an appropriate professional. Information deemed reliable, but not guaranteed. This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company, all rights reserved. For distribution or publication rights and media interviews, please visit www.hartmanmedia.com or email media@hartmanmedia.com. Nothing on this show should be considered specific personal or professional advice. Please consult an appropriate tax, legal, real estate, or business professional for individualized advice. Opinions of guests are their own, and the host is acting on behalf of Platinum Properties Investor Network, Inc., exclusively.